Blog Talk Radio.
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
The birds and the bees are wise to the light.
What do you know?
So they took to the trees and took to the sky.
What do you know?
On top of the chain and safe from the rain.
What do you know?
Would you know about the ways of the underside?
What do you know?
I bought a hot shot jet from an old man in Guinea.
What do you know?
Cause they're hip to the moon and hip to the light.
What do you know?
And yep, but you ask cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Don't you know about the waves on the underside?
What do you know?
In two perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
Hi, Darp.
Hi.
You know, I'm actually glad that we're not big because we get to keep that song for as long as we don't get sued by millions of its people. So, makes me very happy. Hello and welcome to Logicast. Logicast is a weekly podcast that airs almost every Thursday at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We discuss issues like politics, skepticism, religion, history, economic science, and philosophy. I'm Jared Smith, and I'm joined by my wonderful, amazing co-host, Darby Eleanor Macy.
I like that.
Eleanor would have been great for you. Like, that just fits you.
I like that. I would have liked that. Yeah.
Eleanor, when we're like in an argument, that's what I'm going to call you from now on. I'm be like, well, fucking look here, Eleanor, okay? tonight we're going to be discussing whether or not Bernie Sanders is in fact electable. So, Darby, annoyances this week, you get one. Go.
Only one.
Oh, I'm sorry to limit your freedoms.
Yeah. How about that one? I'm going to go with Orange is the New Black, I think.
Okay, no spoilers, because I haven't... Oh, are you talking about what's her name, or...
I'm talking about Rachel, not the show.
Oh, okay.
And it's not really what you think. I'm actually starting to see the situation as, I think she's pretty damaged and disturbed. She was raised in a fundamentalist Christian homeschool environment, and it's been brought up by several sources that she was raised with How to Train Up a Child, which anyone listening might remember as the book that is responsible for at least 4 deaths of children, and the damage and psychological and physical damage to many, many more. And it appears that she and her brother were conscripted to beat their younger adopted sibling a lot based on this book. You're supposed to do that in this book. And so...
Well, wait, beat them?
Beat them, yes. The older siblings are that's part of the family discipline, is that you beat the younger one for disobedience. This also is a book about blanket training, where the baby crawls up the blanket and you beat it. And I mean beat
the blanket
it,
or the like, baby?
No, you beat the baby. You beat the baby for crawling off the blanket. This is how you're supposed to train them to do exactly what you want. From when they're
what?
Pre-verbal and can't even walk yet. You don't know about this book, Jared? You will
I do. I didn't realize all of it. I mean, fuck, dude. Like, it's like a filing cabinet. Like, my brain eventually runs out of space to retain this shit. I mean.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, so it was brought up specifically that she was a training child, and so was her brother Joshua, who's being accused of sexual assault of a child. She's apparently been trying to help the victim of that, and that was part of what people think caused her parents to come out and do this. So every time I hear an interview with her, she's disturbed, I think. And I don't say that in a condescending way, or I think she's ill. Every time I hear somebody use the word transracial about her, it makes me insane, because of course that's not what transracial means. And now it just seems like, you know, what we're doing is parading an extremely psychologically damaged person around and, you know, kind of hitting her with an electric cattle prod. So I'm not saying that what she did was not wrong, because it was wrong. And I find it bizarre, starting to look to me like we're abusing someone who doesn't have the capacity to even realize what is she's doing or how she's going about it is wrong. And I don't think that's because she's stupid. I think it's because she's severely damaged.
You know what I shared a joke. I don't think I was the first one to make the orange to the black connection.
I didn't even hear you make that joke. You must not have been.
I didn't. Yeah. No, actually, I had a friend of mine who asked me what I thought about that. And, I was like, well, you know, she used enough bronzer to qualify as a cast member on Jersey Shore. And, you know, then like I laughed and my friend laughed. And then I was like, well, I guess orange is the new black. This is right after the story kind of hit. And obviously I wasn't the only one that to make that connection.
There's been a lot of us.
There were a lot of people who did. Like, there were memes popping up all over Facebook. And, you know, of course, I wasn't like, yeah, I was the first one to think of that. Like, no, I probably wasn't. You know, but such is comedy. But one of the things that I find really weird about this is how much fucking time we're spending talking about this. Like, talking about this as opposed to talking about what all you just brought up, which, by the way, I didn't know. I mean, in all fairness, after it happened, I just kind of, like, lost, I hate to say it, I lost interest in it. And then this whole thing started happening on Twitter where Rachel was being compared to Caitlyn Jenner, and I'm like, oh my fucking God, eye roll, like, who gives a shit? You know, I don't, like, I literally don't care. If you think they're the same thing, they're not. I shared a one tweet that someone had made that, you know, tried to sort of spell this out just to address the issue. But that's terrible. Like, you can't listen to someone describe themselves as black when they're obviously white and they've obviously never been through the, you know, societal and cultural issues that are associated with being black in this country.
She hasn't, and she can't. The empathy does not cut it. But
yeah,
my point is,
yeah,
she has been through
something
else pretty terrible.
Yeah, and that's what it sounds like. I think that's terrible. Like, that really breaks my heart. That all of that shit. Like, that is bottom line. Like, you know how I feel about spanking, but if I ever saw a parent like hitting a baby, it would be very hard for me to not fucking come unglued on them. I mean, it would be very, very difficult for me to not come unglued.
Me too.
Even if I didn't, you know, if I didn't even know the baby, like, I didn't even know the person.
No, you don't have to know the baby. No. Yeah.
I mean, it's like, obviously, if you're beating a baby, you don't need to be fucking having children. You dick. Anyway. Sorry. I didn't mean to yell. But, you know, well, you know how I feel about that. Like, you know, and just spanking in general, I think is ridiculous. And, you know, and then to hit, like, a baby, what the fuck is wrong with you? Like, why in the world would you do that? And why would anyone teach you to do that? Wasn't this...
People want power and fear. That's what you know, we've discussed that before, and it seems to be true, especially people who lean toward that. The children they have are sometimes the worst victims of that need for power and fear and control.
You know, and
it's heartbreaking.
And I was actually going to cover this in the closing segment, but I didn't because there were other things I wanted to talk about. But you and I have discussed this issue with parents treating their children as property as opposed to treating them as like human beings who have like their own thoughts, their own desires, their own attitudes, their own behaviors. You know, when I was growing up as a kid, like I played baseball when I was a kid, and I also played soccer. And for a parent to like come out of the seat in the bleachers and come unglued on a coach or on a referee, that didn't happen when I was growing up. You know, I mean, that was just
nope,
something you
neither.
Didn't do. Like, you accept the rules of the game. You accept that these people are all fallible. You accept that mistakes are going to be made. Sometimes your kid doesn't get a fair shake. Well, tough shit, that's life. Like, sometimes they just don't. You know, it just happens.
That's right.
You know, and the kid needs to learn that, too. Like, that's an important lesson for children to learn is that you're not always going to get what you want. And sometimes things aren't fair. You know,
no,
I mean.
Right. And I've said that to people. I understand that it's very, very hard to see your kid treated unfairly. I know. But
I mean, but there are constructive ways to try to deal with that problem, and jumping up in someone's face is not the way to deal with that. And I don't know if parents just don't realize that when they do that and their children see them do that, they think that's how you resolve conflict. You know, that's the proper, rational, reasonable way to resolve conflict, and it's just not. And I can't help but think that some of that is bred out of this sort of rampant consumerism that I experienced growing up as a kid that, you know, that, I mean, thankfully my parents weren't as bad as some other parents, but, you know, sort of rampant consumerism that has turned everything into a piece of property, you know, that is now sort of gone down. Gone to the logical conclusion of, you know, well, now my child is my property as opposed to my child is, you know, is his or her own person, is an extension of me, but is still their own human being, you know, because that's the way my parents raised us. Like, they never would have done that. They never would have done some shit like that.
Well, and we've, you know, recently, this ex admissions officer at Stanford is talking about the hovering parents and the enabling parents and the parents that treat their children like they will never be able to do anything and then the children can't. And my friends who teach in academia now, it is not at all unusual, and in fact, it is a common occurrence to have parents call the professors and complain about the grades their child got. And when I was growing up, I was actually trying to imagine calling my father, who was my primary parent and is an incredibly gentle and sympathetic person, and saying, "Dad, my professor gave me a B. Can you call and tell him it fixed it?" I mean, I think he might have had a hernia laughing at me.
Well, it's funny because in my outline, I actually point out that what annoyed me this week was helicopter parents. So that was a perfect segue.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't get this. Here's the thing. If you need to be around your child in order for your, regardless of, you know, if your kid is 18, 19, 20, 25 years old, and you need to be around him or her in order to ensure that they do everything correctly, guess what? You failed as a parent. Congratulations.
Also, in what universe is it required that everyone always do everything correctly? If you never make any mistakes, you learn nothing. You don't mature, so they don't allow them to make any mistakes as young adults that will cause them to learn, oh, shit, I can't do that. Next time I have to do something else. Nope.
Well, you know what's crazy? And there's this other thing, too, and it's almost always like I've received phone calls from both wives and mothers, like inquiring on behalf of either their husband or on behalf of their child, and I always tell them the exact same thing. I'm not going to discuss any specifics with the person who is not going, you know, who is not going to apply for the job. You know, and it's like after I hang up the phone every single time I have one of those conversations, when I put out an ad, usually I get about, you know, probably about 30 or 40 resumes. But I always get at least one of those phone calls from either a wife or a parent. Almost always a mom. And, you know, and right. I always like hang up the phone after it and I just shake my head and I'm like, do you really think that I'm going to give your husband a job if he doesn't know how to pick up the phone and call me and talk to me himself? Do you really think that I'm going to give your child a job if he or she doesn't pick up the phone and call me
and,
you know, his or herself?
You don't even know if that kid might have. This person might just be so interfering into their kid's business that they've actually hobbled the kid. Because now you assume that kid wasn't going to call me himself or herself. And that may not even be true. So the parent has actually done damage.
Yes, I agree. I mean, there's no plausible way someone is going to get, you know, from other companies tell me that they've had mothers sit in on interviews. You know, and I'm like, I'm not an HR person, but I would never allow that. I would never, ever, ever allow that. You know,
Microsoft is actually having events where they are inviting parents because they can't keep them away.
That is so insane to me. Like, if I ever have a kid,
it's pathetic.
If I ever have a kid, I'm going to be like, look, I've given you the tools, the education, and, you know, and the knowledge you need in order to be able to go out here and make it on your own. So, you know, I'm going to continue to support you as long as I can, but I'm not going to go do this shit for you. Like, nobody did it for me. I do it for myself. You need to go do this for yourself. And I wonder if it's like a fear of rejection. They're like, well, I don't want little Timmy, you know, to sort of experience rejection. Like, life is about rejection. You only, you know, in a lot of ways, you can only be comfortable in acceptance when you've endured rejection. You know, because it allows you to kind of understand.
Not in some ways, Jared. I think it's almost impossible to really understand what
I was
like,
trying to be.
You know, first of all,
I was trying to be kind of politically correct without basically saying that if you've never experienced rejection in your life, then you have no fucking clue what it means to actually be accepted because you think that's the, you know, that is the rule and
default.
Not the exception. Yeah, when in fact the opposite is the truth.
That's right. And if you can stand there and handle a rejection from a job you really want and you go home and call your mom, that's fine. Of course you call your mom. And your mom says, oh, I'm so sorry, honey. That must have been terrible. And then you just get your shit together and you go again. And it's even better for you when you finally get the job because you've learned tenacity and you've learned resilience and you've learned how to persevere. all sounds very cheesy, but the fact is you have to do that shit or you don't make it.
Yeah, I mean, you can say all you want about whether you do or don't agree with how the current system is set up, but this is what we have right now. So, you know, this is what you have to work through in order to make it in the real fucking world.
That's right, and I know already. My son's only 5, and I've had to look in his cute little face and say, sometimes things are just not fair. That was not fair for you, but that's just how it is sometimes. And not everybody is going to like you, which is a very painful thing to say to your extremely friendly and likable son.
Right.
He really is a likable person. He's very...
He's always cool with me. I mean, anytime, you know, he, like when we're talking on the phone, he's like, hey, Jared, you know, I don't always understand him. I don't speak 5, but...
Yeah, well, and he's very accepting of people, and so he likes almost everybody, even people who are sort of like, why do you want to hang around that person? He does, because he can see the good in people, which I appreciate about him. But I've already had to say, like, not everybody's going to like you. Not everybody's going to want to play with you. And their little face falls, and you feel like you want to say, oh, just kidding, everyone will love you. That is bullshit, and I would not be doing him any favors telling him that. Because when you inevitably go into the world, or even elementary school, which he's about to do, and figure out that, like, some people are just jerks. Some teachers are not going to like you for no reason, or for some reason that is out of your control, or sometimes for a reason that isn't your fault, and then you have to, or that is your fault, and you have to, like, deal with it. That, all that stuff is missing from this coddling shit. And I don't know what world they think they're sending their kid into, because you can't follow them forever.
No, I mean, I agree. And, do they think that if they get their kid to, like, a certain point, I don't know, like, that the
I think that must be it. I think
like,
they're telling themselves,
you know.
Well, if I can just get him into college, and then after that, it's like, make sure they get good grades, and then after that, I just make sure they, you know, get the right kind of dates, or the right kind of job. I mean, all of that, I think that they just keep telling themselves that. You know, I mean, that must be it, right? What other way would you have to hobble your child and think it's the right thing to do?
You know what? This actually reminds me of a Mark Twain quote. He goes, the most interesting sayings come from children because they say everything they know and then stop.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That is pretty good. Hey, Mark Twain was a pretty smart guy, you know.
He was.
I mean, but anyway, we can always end a segment on, we got to get to this, otherwise we're going to run out of time.
Yeah, we do.
Always end a segment on a Mark Twain quote. You know, he once famously said that, you know, God gave Americans war so he could teach them geography.
That's not working very well.
Where is Iraq? I don't know. It's one of the countries with brown people over there in the middle of the, you know, the map. Somewhere over there by Africa. Anyway. All right. Bernie Sanders. Okay. So, I like Bernie. I know you like Bernie. I'm probably going to vote for him when, during the Super Tuesday primary down here in, this neck of the woods that will likely not vote for a Democrat. I don't know, though, man. Greg Abbott's doing a pretty good job of convincing a lot of people I know not to ever vote Republican again. I want you to kind of give me a snapshot of Bernie's platform.
Well, Bernie has this sort of... let me just say, when he first declared, which is only a few weeks ago, really, in April, right? Mostly, I actually looked through the headlines, and it's funny because you go through, it's like, oh my God, this guy is great, but he'll never win. And just in the last 2 weeks, there are quite a few more people going, are we sure he's unelectable? I mean, really sure he's unelectable. Let's be sure. I am going to argue that Bernie Sanders is not unelectable. And of course, we have two issues here. One is whether he's unelectable, and one is whether he's unelectable when running against Hillary Clinton. And we can talk about that later. But see, his platform is pretty, I mean, this, I never say this because this is politics in America. It is really different. He's not going after any of the millionaires' money. He's not trying, he's not saying anything. He's not packaging these little answers. He's not attacking his opponents. He doesn't, he's absolutely just kind of, he's already won 14 elections, for goodness sake. I mean, it's not like he's unelectable to anything, right? He understands the system and how it works. He's already operated as an independent without a lot of the money that both party candidates rely on. And he's ready to do that again. And as one person who I can't remember who it was, I think it was someone on the Daily Cost, said, well, here's what's weird. If you think about it this way, if everybody who is struggling because they're not, their Social Security benefits have been slashed, and everyone who has terrible working conditions because unions have been completely, you know, hacked off the knees, and everybody who is pissed off because they're, you know, they're working their ass off and still poor, if all those people actually vote for Bernie, it's possible that Bernie can get elected. I'm not saying that he's going to. I'm saying it's a long shot, but I really don't think it's impossible. And part of it is the, yeah, there are a few problems with Hillary, and one of them pisses me off a lot. Not at her. So Bernie shows up and sounds like he doesn't have these packaged canned answers, and he answers things directly, and he doesn't answer like a politician, which is crazy to hear. It's almost like you're in Canada or something, or France. You're like, oh my God, he just answered that question. And then, but Hillary doesn't do that. Everything of hers is like, we don't, you know, and he said, what's Hillary running on? Do you know? No one knows. And the truth is, it's hard to know, right? Because she's always sort of doing this political equivocating, and she's not really passionately standing for anything, and she's not spending a lot of time, you know, speaking progressively on issue A, B, or C. She's sort of, you know,
I don't agree with that. I got to stop you right there. I don't agree with that.
Okay. Well, just let me finish. You can disagree with that in a second. But
okay.
The point I was driving at here that annoys me is that I think her completely together and coiffed and, like, you know, steadfast and stoic to some degree appearance is unfortunately necessary because she's already battling against this. We can't elect a woman because they're all emotional and they're, you know, completely ruled by their hormones and, oh, she's going to cry. That shit is real shit. And so, I mean, I'm sure she has strategists going, listen, keep it together, whatever you, like, you cannot have a Howard Dean moment, ever. And that, it pisses me off, but I don't blame her for that. I really don't. So what do you disagree with me about?
Well, I mean, for one, Hillary has quite a few positions that she's come out in support of. I mean, you know, in terms of women's rights and gay marriage and she made her... I felt like she, you know, made her position on income inequality fairly clear. She's had plenty of things to say about climate change. The majority of her positions, in fact, almost all of them, you know, are at least left of center, if not further left of center, depending on how you define that line.
Depending on where center is.
You know, now, one of the things that I will concede about Sanders, which obviously, again, I'm not arguing on behalf of Clinton necessarily, but one of the things I'll concede about Sanders is that he actually has already given real plans, like real, this is what I will do when I'm president. And, yep. You know, that is something that politicians in general don't typically do.
Nope, and she hasn't done it. And I understand what you're saying because I know her position on several things, but you'll notice it's very carefully crafted, right? And I
well,
haven't
of course
heard
it
her
is.
Say what she's going to do about it. Well, yes, that's what I'm saying, though. That's why Bernie is different. And
no,
it's very
I
unusual
don't
for me. It's unusual for me to have my political heart go pitter-patter with somebody. But, I, you know, if I vote for Hillary, if Hillary wins the primary, I'll vote for her. I mean... she's done some crap I do not like. Her health care plan from whatever that was, 8 or 10 years ago, total disaster.
It was eight or ten years ago. I mean,
right,
there are ideas
right,
you had 8 or 10 years ago that were terrible.
Absolutely. But the problem is she's never, like, said, well, that was total bad. You know, what I want to know is if she's going to do something different, I want to hear about that. I want to know what she's going to do. And she's sort of running on her own momentum. I'm glad she has it. I will vote for Hillary if she gets the nomination. I won't even be that sad about it. But it will be slightly sad because I would rather have Bernie. Because I actually think Bernie says he's going to do stuff and then he's going to do it. He's already done it in Congress. You know, he voted against DOMA.
Yes, I know.
I mean,
he did.
He's done a lot of that shit. Look,
the guy has been internally consistent for the vast majority of his career.
How crazy is that?
That is very respectable. Last person who even came close to being this consistent, and I fucking hate to give this guy any kind of accolades because he's a nut job, is Ron Paul. Ron Paul actually was pretty consistent throughout the majority of his career, and
he was for quite a while, but he was.
When he ran for president, now he's trying to make as much money as he can off of his own brand. But for a long time he was pretty consistent. Now he did some things that were not consistent and, put out some, or at least signed off on newsletters that were, not very, he did a lot of crazy shit, but Bernie Sanders, for all intents and purposes, has been very consistent and has stood by his beliefs and has stood by his beliefs in terms of his politics and has voted according to his, to his philosophies. Which is commendable. What's amazing in this country is that the process is so completely fucked that we actually have to applaud this guy who has been consistent throughout his career. Like,
I know
that shouldn't
That's really
be
sad.
The exception. That should be the fucking rule.
I know. You're right.
I mean, that is so sad that it borderlines on absolutely tragic. It is a borderline on tragic. It is fucking tragic.
No, it is tragic. It's tragic that we have to, we look at this guy and say, wow, he does what he says he's going to do every time. And then he doesn't turn around and change his mind when somebody hands him money. That should be every politician in the country.
Well, usually he just doesn't take the money.
Yeah.
So.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, So let's kind of back up a bit because I asked you, we kind of went off on a pretty quick tangent, which is fine, but I wanted you to give me a snapshot of his platform. He calls himself a socialist Democrat, right? So his views are, in terms of the
he wants single payer health care.
The mentality of this country, they're pretty far left. I mean, you have to agree with that. Like, in terms of where the center is in this country, it's pretty far left shit. Now, here's the funny thing.
I'm not sure where the center is. Are you?
50 years ago, I'm in general center. I mean, I think that there are some things most Democrats and most Republicans can agree on. Actually, you know what? No, I have no idea where the fucking center is. No,
that's
not
what
anymore.
That's the real question.
The center moves. The center moves every single time every single time a Republican or a Democrat is elected to president. I mean, every single time.
Well, it seems to move with individual news stories. I mean,
and sometimes it
and
does.
You hear most Americans want this, and then you're like, no, they don't. And then somebody gets elected. It's obvious that most of the people voting anyway didn't want that at all. So you get this idea that like, oh, Americans, they're all want this and this, but that doesn't seem to be. I'm unclear on where the voting center actually is right now. So I don't know how far left he really is.
Here's what I'm really unclear about. If you don't tell someone you're a socialist and you start asking them questions about how much they should be paid and what their benefits should be and how much the people at the top should make, the majority of workers, even in this community, which is fucking hyper-conservative, when I break people away and I have like private conversations with them and I say, don't you want to be paid a wage that you can live very comfortably on? Well, of course. Okay. Don't you want good benefits? Don't you want to not have to worry about, you know, whether or not cancer is going to, you know, wipe out your retirement funds? Well, of course. You know, do you think that someone should make $1 billion a year while, you know, you struggle to feed your family? No. Okay, so.
And yes.
And then I'll be like, okay, so a union is the answer, and they'll be like, no, we don't want unions.
No. Yeah.
You know, and it's like, you know, this is the problem that I've always had with Republicans, and I've never understood it. Like, what the fuck is your solution? Like, how do you solve the problem of income inequality? You know, in their mind, it's give more money to the rich; it will incentivize them. But ironically, they also
give money
to the poor. Yeah, if you give money to the poor, that disincentivizes them. So
that's right.
Fucking which is it? Like, why is it that poor people
or rich people,
you know, are more incentivized when they have more money, but poor people are less incentivized when they have more money? The opposite is fucking true, and pretty much all of economic history demonstrates this. I mean, I'm just saying.
That's right. And we know that the trickle-down theory does not work. We've seen it in action, and we know Reagan was, we're going to be great. Wrong. It didn't work. There's no spin that you can put on it that says it works. And so as I don't remember who it was, somebody on Bill Maher on Friday said, they're all saying, because, you know, their PR guys have told them, it's really important that you say you care about income inequality. So you got to bring that up. Bring it up. So they do. But then they actually say nothing about what they're going to do about it, except for the things that we absolutely know empirically do not work.
Right.
So it's almost like they say it, and then they just keep talking with their usual shit that we know is going to make it worse, or at the very, in the very best case scenario, not make it any better. And yet no one seems to be really noticing that that's what's happening. I keep hearing about, like, well, the Republicans seem to care about income. No, they don't. They're saying the words, and they're saying nothing about it. Bernie is saying what he wants to do about it. Bernie is talking about single-payer health care. And the fact that that is so, like, it's such a pearl-clutching issue. And I'm like, almost every other country, like, industrialized country in the Western world has a system like that. And then people trot in and go, the UK has two waiting lines, one for Canada. And it's like, okay, let's not do UK or Canada. Let's do France. You want to talk about France? How, you know, and you talk to people about that, and they're like, really? But sort of like unions, they hear, you know, government health care. And, of course, these are the same people that have Medicare and love it. They would never give up their Medicare. I will never forget that woman standing in front of the White House with that sign that became sort of infamous on the internet that said, government, stay out of my Medicare.
Yeah, keep your government hands off my Medicare. Like,
who do you think is funding your, oh God, my head.
Yeah, this is why we need more funding to public schools, right? So, so that lady's children don't end up being as ignorant as she is. You know, okay, so let me kind of back up for a second. One of the things, you know, and you and I, here's what I think. I think that Sanders is probably electable as a president, okay? I don't think, given the current momentum of Hillary Clinton, that Sanders is electable as a president at this point, okay? Here's what I want to see, and here's what I always say. Every single year, it's been the same thing since about 2008, all right? In order to determine who's going to become president, you have to rely on the debates. You have to rely on the debates. The debates, almost always in terms of statistics, almost always determine whether or not a candidate can or can't get elected, okay? There have been plenty of candidates throughout history that have had really good momentum, and then they've sucked ass at the debates, and, you know, and end up sort of falling by the wayside, right? Like, you know, we all remember Rick Perry's, you know, kind of gaffe. You know, and now the guy is, you know, has glasses on, I guess, to make us all think he's more studious, despite the fact that he's a complete
idiot. Yeah, I saw that.
You know, like, hey, look how smart I am. This is the new smart Rick Perry, not the previous
I've got
idiot
these really
Rick Perry.
Snappy glasses. Got my snappy glasses on.
You know, so, I mean, I want to see Hillary Clinton debate Bernie Sanders. That's what I want to see happen. Okay, you know, and I'm going to vote for Bernie, you know, I'm going to support Bernie, I'm going to vote for Bernie, because I'm in Texas, like, it doesn't really fucking matter what we do down here, you know. Now, if I were in a swing state, you know, it's very likely that I would vote for Hillary Clinton, and the reason, hang on, but the reason why, it's all about strategy. I'm not convinced that Bernie Sanders, even if he got the Democratic, you know, the Democratic nod, I'm not convinced he would be able to beat a Republican candidate, especially someone like Scott Walker or Rand Paul. I don't think that he would be able to, because I don't think he could raise the money in order to do so. And 538, there are several blogs on 538 that actually talk about this and actually kind of back me up. You know, and there have been other, you know, other people running, you know, running the numbers on these things and, you know, are basically coming to the same conclusion that if Bernie Sanders beats Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary, he will lose in the general election.
I don't know that that's true, though. I want to see the numbers and where that's coming from. I really do, because I feel like if you can mobilize, and this has been true in other elections, if you can mobilize people who don't usually vote or who usually vote by default, you can change the way the election goes. And we all remember, like, I was just reading this guy today saying, you know, when I never heard of this Barack Obama right after 9/11, and I thought, well, hell no, he's not going to get, he can't get elected. You know, I mean, this is a black guy who is nobody's ever heard of. He's got, his middle name is Hussein. There's no way. And of course that seemed absolutely true. I didn't think he'd be elected because I thought people were too freaking racist to elect him. I didn't really see what happened, which is that enough people were able to overlook whatever racism they might have had to vote for him, and then he would just be annihilated in a way that, like, I'm obviously he's not annihilated as a person or a president. I just mean, like, the disgusting behavior that people have around him, unlike other presidents, it really shocks the shit out of me, to be honest. It's
I want to interrupt. Just let me interrupt real quick. And the reason why is because I want to go back to what you said about Obama. Okay.
Okay.
Obama had a much closer lead to Clinton than Sanders did at the same time in the process.
But okay. He just entered.
You're right. You're right. But again, at the same time in the process, I mean, you know, 538 is really good. Like, anyone who doesn't check out the 538 blog, I strongly suggest doing so. Like, if you like numbers and you like analyzing statistics, like, it's fascinating. It's a great blog.
But is it apples and apples? How long had Obama been in at the same time?
Nothing can ever truly be apples and apples because there are so many factors to consider. But the point is that Obama started gaining the most amount of steam during the debates. I mean, that was when, you know, between that and between Iraq, between Hillary's position on Iraq at the time, those two things is, you know, ended up costing her the... you know, nod, I think, you know, being given the chance to go and, you know, become president. You know what I loved about that, though, is that there was a period, there was a point in time where I knew that there was either going to be a black guy, a black guy to get the nod, or a woman that would get the nod. You know, in my opinion, that was really great. And, you know, at this point, it's going to basically be between a pretty much self-described. I know Sanders has kind of like backtracked on his whole like I'm a pot-smoking non-believer. But I'm pretty sure he still
Did
is.
Did he say that?
Yes, he was on Bill Maher, and you know, and Bill Maher kind of gave him that. Yes, yes. Hold on. What did he say exactly, Bernie Sanders?
I didn't think he was. I didn't think he said he was a non-believer. I mean, I think he said he was a lapsed Jew.
Hold on. What did he say? Hold on. Let me see if I can find the quote. Oh, I'm unprepared. I shouldn't have said that, not being prepared. Okay, hold on, because I know that Haman, like, yeah, here we go. Okay, so he is a secular Jew. Here we go. He received a 0% rating from the Christian Coalition last year, which apparently that's great. Yes.
Don't you get 10% just for being a Jew?
I
mean, one of the chosen people, even if you're not, you know, practicing, you'd think.
Okay, Adolf.
I'm making a joke about Christians and their weirdness about Israel, about Jews.
No, I know. Fine. Okay, I don't know if we really ever got to the point. Look, my point is, I think Bernie Sanders is electable as president because we got to get to.
I want you to tell me why you think against Hillary. It's just the money. You think she has momentum? He's gaining momentum faster.
I think he's gaining, but that's the thing. There's only so much momentum to be gained, and there's only so much percentage of the vote to be had, and I think a lot of that is already spoken for in terms of Clinton. And again, these 538 blogs actually back this up.
People will change their minds.
In terms of people do change their minds. The problem is that people tend to fall with regard to where the momentum is. So, you know, in terms of the okay, so in terms of just sheer senator endorsements, the most that had ever been had prior to, you know, at this point in the process, prior to 2012 was 10, and that was by John McCain, okay? And these are senator endorsements. Hillary Clinton has 27 at this point in the process. Okay, which means that senator and all of his or her constituents are, you know, are going to be hearing nothing but, you know, the Hillary Clinton machine, you know, throughout the process. Ronald Reagan, Ronald Reagan in 1980, he had 5. The great Ronald Reagan had 5. I mean, you know, now that's a big deal, okay? Now, in terms of the polling lead in Iowa, New Hampshire, and then nationally, we can get to New Hampshire here in a second. Basically, she's at 60% nationally. I mean, she is probably one of the best candidates to ever exist in the history of this country, one of the best presidential candidates to ever exist in the history of this country. That's why Hillary Clinton, Bernie Sanders is not the fluke here. Hillary Clinton is.
Well, okay.
I mean, that's kind of the, you know, I really want to explain that, like, and I want to clarify that this is nothing to do with Bernie.
No, it makes sense to me.
Bernie runs, you know, and one of the things that I like about Bernie, here's what people always ask me. They say, why is it that the right, if they want to elect a moderate candidate, why do they let all these fucking crazies into the fold? Okay, let me tell you why. The reason why is so that the right can get not only the moderates, but they can also get just enough of the evangelical vote to make enough of a difference to try to almost win the election or to win the election. Okay, and this has worked for them before. This is what Reagan did. You know, Reagan was a union leader who came from Hollywood, you know, who basically culled the religious right. That's how Reagan won the presidency. He was very, very smart about it. That was the way that they marketed it, you know, by culling that group of, you know, untapped voters. You know, and it's very powerful when your pastor is standing up and he's going, you know what? This is, you know, we've got to take God's country back. You need to get into the, get out of the closet and get into the voting booth. You know, and that came from Mike Huckabee's mentor. So, you know, I mean, that's a big part of it. They let these crazies into the fold. That way these people can feel represented enough that they will actually go and vote Republican. You know, and I think that Bernie Sanders is playing the same kind of role in a sense to those of us who are progressives on the left. We want someone like Sanders. We'll suffer someone like Hillary Clinton because, fuck, who the fuck wants Rand Paul elected as president of the United States of America? Definitely not me. So anyway, so that's kind of my point. We need people like Bernie. And the reason why we need people like Bernie is because we need people like Bernie to push Hillary Clinton further to the left.
Yeah.
So anyway. All right, we got to get to, did I tell you that we had to, I didn't tell you this. No, I did. We had to change the name of This Week in Dumb. Those guys over at CBS apparently already coined the phrase. Really weird because it's not like I never worked there. I did. And apparently I didn't realize that they had something called This Week in Dumb. So, very unfair. Very unfair. But anyway, I know, we're just going to call it Dumb Shit of the Week. So, time for Logicast Dumb Shit of the Week. So first in Dumb Shit of the Week, assholes on the right need to stop using paramedics, nurses, and the fucking military and their arguments against raising the minimum wage. This has apparently become a thing on the right now. Take someone with an emotionally challenging job, spin a sob story about how little they're paid, then show a picture of a bunch of minorities who want to be paid enough just to survive. I get that hyperbole is big on the right, with their constant parading of Jesus on the cross, aborted fetuses, pictures of Obama painted like Hitler. But God fucking damn, the only way these people would care about either the paramedic or the fast food worker is if the paramedic was transporting the fast food worker to the hospital and he ended up dying on the way while not having health insurance. And even then, they would only give a shit because, you know, they'd be able to use the fast food worker's death as an example of how Obamacare doesn't work. And next in Dumb Shit of the Week, someone needs to tell Donald Trump that being a rich, dumb prick probably won't get him elected. And he should just ask Mitt Romney how well that worked out for him. Also, while not working tirelessly at trying to discover Barack Obama's secret identity, Trump has been busy gearing up to run for the presidency. And by gearing up, I mean he's been learning to comb that thing on his head while trying to figure out how to waste $9 billion spreading a message that's about 30 years too late. Really hate that guy, by the way. Oh, fuck him. I hate him. And finally, in Dumb Shit of the Week, Americans need to stop making excuses and just admit it. We don't give a fuck how many people are killed in mass shootings. Gun control is for far-left socialist idiots who want to destroy the freedom of hardworking Americans to shoot each other in the face. You know what I always hear? We can't have gun control in this country because criminals don't obey the law. No shit, smart guy. That's why they're called criminals. You know, some years ago, the United States of America decided that people who drink too much alcohol and then get behind the wheel of a car posed a threat to the rest of us. Legislation was passed, so-called freedoms were restricted, and you know what happened? Drunk driving deaths were cut in half, even though there are now more drivers on the road than ever before. And while Second Amendment proponents are correct that you don't have a right to drive a car, there is something else to be considered here: public safety. And there's absolutely nothing safe about having stupidly relaxed gun laws that allow just about anyone to buy a gun. And to those of you who think we don't need gun control, let's talk statistics for a moment. Someone is murdered by a gun in this country every 43 minutes. Another person commits suicide with a gun every 29 minutes. There were 121 survivors of intentional gun shootings today, 50 survivors of accidental gun shootings. are around 250 gun-related rapes and sexual assaults every single day in this country, and at least one child is unintentionally killed by a gun every day in the United States of America. And do you know what we're beginning to find out about Dylann Roof? You know, the white supremacist asshole who just killed 9 people in a church? That his parents gave him the gun he used to murder them. And do you know what's illegal about that in this country? A parent giving a child a gun? Not a goddamn thing. And you know what's sad about that? Those 9 people had to lose their lives so Cletus from Mississippi can own as many guns as he can afford, just in case Obama's team of IRS agents ever try and make him pay taxes on the 1970 tractor he bought from his neighbor. Yes, that kind of paranoia is real. And assholes like Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh and shitty organizations like the NRA have all contributed to the growing stream of paranoid lunatics in this country who almost always seem to exist on the far right. And that's not a coincidence, by the way. It's what I call the paranoid industrial complex. And the paranoid industrial complex is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week of nonstop print, radio, and television that is attempting to convince poor white Americans that they've been screwed over by a black president because the help they should get is actually going to black people. And what's the best way to prevent Obama, the IRS, and FEMA from coming to get you? Guns! You need guns! How are you going to fight against the most heavily armed and advanced military in the world? No idea. But you need your guns. And that's what the Second Amendment has become. The belief that you're only as free as the number of guns you own, and in order to remain free, you need to ensure that assholes like Dylann Roof can acquire them. And you know what happens every single time we go through this? A politician says something about gun control, the NRA chimes in, people start buying guns and ammunition in fear of the government taking them, and then we get to play this stupid game all fucking over again, and nothing ever changes. You've been listening to Logicast. We are on every almost Thursday night, 8 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time, 9 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. I'm Jared Smith with my wonderful co-host Darby Mason. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/logicast. You can listen to our previous episodes at blogtalkradio.com/logicast. Darby, as always, it was a pleasure.
It was.
All right. Take care and good night.
Good night.
What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
The birds and the bees are wise to the light. So they took to the trees and took to the sky.
What do you know?
On top of the chain and safe from the rain.
What do you know?
What do you know about the ways of the underside?
What do you know?
Bought a hot shot bed from an old Van Guinea.
What do you know?
Cause they're hip to the pool and hip to the light. But the ask is you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
What you know about the ways on the underside?
What do you know?
A hot shot cat from a North Bay Guinea.
What do you know?
Ain't it up with your ass cause you ain't got a penny.
What do you know?
Dropping bombs from above cause you're all damn size.
What do you know?
Yeah, the streets rose in 2 perfect ways in the night.
What do you know?
One crashes on my left and one on my right. It's all fire and brimstone, baby, so let's go outside.
What do you know?
It's all fire and brimstone, baby. I got my brand new pistol, baby.
What do you know?
What a hot shot cat from a North Bay Guinea.
What do you know?
Got a penny.
she's on the underside.
What do you know?
Got a hot shot cat from a North Bay.